Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. On a phone today, hopefully we'll be back to our microphone tomorrow. Have a lot to share. I'm going to start, of course, with the latest on health and healing. I'm going to do something a little different, because every time I speak with someone, they seem not to have taken some notes on what are the best nutrients to get from our food, hopefully organic, local, so it's freshest, has the highest nutrient content, because you lose a lot of antioxidants after a week when something was grown in California and you live in New York and it's taken a week to get there, and then it takes a couple of days before you actually go to a store and purchase it. So many people are not aware that by the time you buy something, it's generally 10 days out, whereas if you get something at the farmer's market or locally, you bought it this morning, you're eating it this afternoon, maximum. But also, I want to make sure that we have the nutrients that really maximize our health. So you're going to get a tutorial today, like a classroom on the air. Then I'm going to play some interesting clips. I'm particularly concerned about any time a child is separated from their parents by the state, we should all be concerned. And it's not just because it's humane and causes trauma, but it also is not a solution. But why is it now, on the weekend we had, and rightly so, and I support it, several hundred thousand Americans coming out and saying this is wrong? Was it political? Was it because they're against Trump and his policies? Because I'm also concerned, where were these same people when parents had their children taken away because the parent had educated themselves, knew that chemotherapy was not what they wanted for that child's recovery from cancer? And so their child was put into the horrific conditions of child service agency homes. And then what about the children also that were displaced because of their parents being incarcerated? And why didn't we have more humanistic incarceration, where a family could get together, including the children, and be with the incarcerated person? And why do we even have the incarceration system? It is stupid and vile and only comes from a dumbed-down society that's lost touch with what it is. Unless you want reform, I'll tell you exactly how to do it. Have every single wealthy person, upper-middle-class person, and, of course, every millennial go to jail for a week with no preferential treatment. However anyone else would be treated in jail, they would be treated. What do you want to bet that we would have reform within an hour? It would all change. So then I have to ask, and again, it's my personal opinion, no one else's, aren't we just completely knee-deep in BS? Because I didn't see a single march by anyone for the 1 million children who've not just been displaced, but phosphorus bombed by American troops using illegal phosphorus. Where was the outrage when Vietnamese children, by the hundreds of thousands, were hit and burned alive? And then dealing with depleted uranium in Iraq, and dealing with the loss of their parents in other countries. Or are we selectively outraged because it's Trump? And why weren't we outraged when it was Obama and Clinton and George Bush? You see, I have a hard time as a human being that actually has a brain still left, at least a few cells, that it, and I won't compromise to political ideology and the politics of the day, identity politics, which I despise, and you should too. But that's the game they're playing. They play us off one another. They say, be against killing of innocent civilians in other countries if it's Trump. Yes, but don't say a word if it's Hillary Clinton. After all, she's going to be the president. Remember that? What do you think that did to our image? What do you think it did to the people? What do you think it did to the children? I know that I'm not the only person who sees through this entire Orwellian, even Kafka, charade. If you really care, don't come out for one day. And I'm going to play you a clip today. Then I'm going to do a back behind-the-scenes analysis. It's a clip from Washington, D.C., where almost 10,000 of you marched over 10 days from New York. Remember, we started in Prospect Park and stopped along the way, giving presentations about organic, sustainable food, why we should be against GMOs. And to your credit, you stuck with it. Now, these are really committed people, all walks of life, lawyers, school teachers, engineers. And then when we got down to Washington, and it was so well organized. Now, I want to acknowledge Dr. Broner's company, because he really put up the money to make this happen. There were portable showers, really neat. There were like all these showers for women, all these showers for men on this truck you could go in. The food was all healthy and organic. Volunteers every step of the way, and we made it happen, and we had our voice. And that was the beginning of the March Against Monsanto that has mushroomed into a worldwide effort where tens of millions of people participate. But there was a group in Washington at the same time that I filmed in front of the White House. And that film is up on YouTube. I just looked at it yesterday. 89,000 people have watched it. And you can watch it, but you can listen to it today. Then I'm going to give you the backstory and show you that there are a lot of people who say they're against something, but they don't tell you what they're for. So today we're going to see what we're against and what we're for, and why, unless you're for something to replace what you're against, you have a net zero-sum gain. Nothing changes. And it's time that we stop doing things out of some knee-jerk reaction because of our politics or ideology. And we did something because it's the spiritual, humanistic, ethical, and moral way to do something. And it should not be defined because someone is a color or race, ethnicity or religion or educational or cultural person. You're a human being. You deserve kindness. You deserve respect. And right now, we are just tearing ourselves apart in the United States. Who does that benefit? Step back for a moment. Who gains when there's complete chaos and hubris and disorder? You want to see this in play? Go to a WBAI or KPFK or KPFA or PFW, a local community station board meeting, and you'll be horrified. And you think, my God, what is the purpose? To fight one another? To accuse one another? To condemn? To use racial epithets? Use physical and verbal violence? What do you think the outcome is? Now, did you ever imagine pull back and see not just something at a local station that allows it to be destroyed from inside, but now go across the country and you'll see what's happening? We're not going to get any better, more wise, change anything if we can't stop doing these internecine conflicts. So that's our show today. We're going to start, as we always do, with the latest on health and healing. And by the way, next week I have a couple spiritual feminists, and this week I have two feminists, or not feminists. They're pro-women's rights, pro-equality, but they're adamantly opposed to how things are being done in the name of equality. And what's interesting is how we selectively filter and censor any ideology, any person that we say is the other. Now think of that for a moment. I even identified this with my producer about three producers ago. I was getting good guests, but they all had the same mindset. Now, one day I said, look, there are a lot of good people. Oh, yeah, well, they're conservative. So, are you suggesting that a person who holds some political conservative views has no capacity to make any informed knowledgeable information for us? I want people, and I don't care if they're liberal or conservative. That's irrelevant. What's relevant is, can they empower us? I don't have to accept everything they do. Look, if I eat at a good restaurant and I enjoy the meal, I don't care what the politics of the chef is. I'm not going to go back and say, you're a Marxist, I can't eat here. Communist, I'm definitely going to not eat here. That's nonsense. That's childish. You have to listen non-judgmentally to what someone has to say. Then you decide whether or not they said anything that can inform you or not, in which case you can say, okay, I listened. I didn't find anything informant. But what happens when we listen to someone and suddenly they drop a nugget on us and we think, wow, I didn't think of that. But as long as we stay insulated with filters at every level of our being, how are we supposed to grow? How are we supposed to know what it is to be the other? How are we supposed to broaden our perspective? I'm just finding that our whole society is not just dumbing down, but they're desensitizing down. And therefore, they can walk by people who are poor and not care. Where was the March for the Poor? You talk about people who have it rough. What about homeless children? Where was the March for the Homeless Children? None. Why not? Are we that selective that we can become outraged, and rightly so, on one issue of a child separated from a parent, but we don't care whether or not that child is suffering from malnutrition, depression, trauma of living on the streets, in shelters, out of the back of cars? What does that say about us, individually and collectively as a society? So we're going to talk about these issues today, and you're going to have a chance to either email your responses anywhere around the world at prnstudio@gmail.com, or you can call in and at 888-874-4888. So now we go to the nutrients that help our body. And I'll be very specific. Let's say our heart. Because the number one cause of disease death, the number one cause of death is iatrogenesis, meaning our physicians and what they're doing. And I don't suggest that they're doing this intentionally, not at all. I believe that the vast majority of people within the healthcare field would like to see their patients recover, do well, and not be a patient at all. I do not subscribe to the notion that every doctor is greedy, and that they should all, you know, exceed the ladder of success as careerists. That is simply not the truth. I've known too many doctors. Now, the fact that their system is corrupted by people who only want to make money, that I agree with. We're spending $3.4 trillion this year. Give you a comparison, that's more than we spend on housing, food, and the military-industrial complex combined. And yet not a word is said, not a single piece of legislation even introduced that would change that. For example, by having universal health care. And by the way, if anyone, any economist, wants to know the economics on it, I have spent thousands of hours breaking this down. And I can give anyone, in fact, when Dennis Kucinich was running for president and he came to New York, I said, Dennis, I have a system that could justify not only saving money, but saving up to $1 trillion a year, where the government would not be beholden by having a taking the profit out of medicine. And so the system does exist. It just hasn't been implemented. It would be far better, by the way, than any of the systems in England, Canada, Germany, France. But I'll deal with that when I find there's a group of people willing to listen. I'll share it. Be happy to. So the heart, including heart disease, heart attacks, strokes, that's a big issue. And most people don't pay attention to it until it's too late. Recently, I got a call late at night. In fact, it was early in the morning, from a friend of mine who said, close friend of yours just had 7 strokes. How they're alive is in and of itself. You never hear someone having 7 strokes and surviving. What do we do? Well, I immediately, you know, put that as the number one focus, and I got in touch with the person, gave him protocols, got someone who could help implement the protocols. But then I asked the person, after they were out of crisis, a few days later, why? Why did you allow yourself to get to this state of health? Well, you know, I work so hard and I don't, go to the farmer's market. I don't do any of that stuff. I eat in pizzas, and I don't have time to juice, so I drink colas. Well, you're not making time for those things. And this person definitely has a martyr complex. This person wouldn't take a vacation, wouldn't take a day off, no matter what. They see themselves as a prisoner to saving other people's lives. And they have. And on a truly noble level, this person will never be famous. But for the people whose lives this person has saved with their cancer therapies, they were the ones who could benefit. But the person could have done the same identical thing, but just done it by also maintaining time for themselves. And that's the key. We don't realize how precious time is till it's run out. And then we say, wow. And I've heard this from so many nurses in hospice care. On generally the last day of a person's life, they'll tell the nurse, or whoever's there, I wished I would have done it differently. What do you mean? I wished I'd have made different choices. So it frequently takes someone moments before death, when there's no one that can criticize them, no one be disappointed in them, for them to finally say, I live my life for everyone else, not myself. I was a good daughter. I was a good son. I was a good husband. I was a good wife. I was all these things to everyone who needed me to be that for them. But it was never my true and authentic life I was living. And for that, you have to take quiet time, that time, the aesthetic time, the time to go into nature, to go to maybe a Buddhist retreat, and just spend time with no one, talking about nothing, and focusing upon what is your true purpose for, what is your raison d'etre? What is the meaning of your life? What is the purpose of it? Because we're not asking that. And if you don't ask that, then what good is it for me to give you a protocol for your heart and give you the nutrients and the juices and everything else if that only represents about 15%, and 50% of what is going to keep you alive or kill you has to do with the value of your beliefs? And that's something we have a hard time wrapping our mind around because it seems so existential. It doesn't seem practical. It seems too pragmatic. Well, it's just too deep. I don't know. I guess the meaning of my life is what I've done up to this point. No, that's your career. Well, you're going to have a dozen relationships. And relationships only last so long. Appreciate them when you have them. Don't mourn them when they're gone. And be open to the possibility you're going to have another one even better. We stay too long in too many chapters of our lives and frequently don't learn the lesson. If you knew the purpose of your life and the lesson of your life, then your career, your family, your education, your opportunities would become secondary. That you would not be grounded in them. And that's how we lose sight of what's important. I was just thinking this morning about how many people that have been close friends of mine, and all close, I mean, you know, where we socialize together and travel together, who are not here. Not one of them had to die. Every single one of those deaths was preventable. And you realize that I was on the phone, I was in person, if they weren't near me, I was talking with them, I was pleading with them to make a change. But also I understood there's a boundary. You can't go across that boundary and touch that third rail. Because then it's not just caring about another person. You're insisting. And that disempowers them. And the hardest lesson in life to learn is not the person who's learning the life lesson, but rather it's you to understand that your lesson is you do not cross that boundary. Because when you do, then whatever changes they're making because they feel coerced, threatened. They're going to, you know, they're going to lose something. And so whatever changes they make are going to be temporary. It's never sustainable. Let me give you the hard facts, friends. Listen carefully to what I'm going to tell you because this is from a long experience. I've done every kind of quantum analysis of who wants to be healthy in the United States, and recently a study was released having nothing to do with me that showed that 97% of Americans make unhealthy choices intentionally. 97%. We like to think we're all stupid. We're not. It has nothing to do with education. I've met people who've never been to school who have a lot of common sense, are very capable of figuring things out, but then why do they make a bad choice? Rarely will you be making consistently bad choices if you understand the true meaning of your life, and that's coming from love, and that's coming from that spiritual side. But the conditioned self has nothing but bad choices. It's just bad to the bone, and it's dark as you can be, and it's not even shades of black inside of that psyche. Epigenetic conditioning is almost always conditioning you to adapt to the people's imbalanced emotions and maladaptive behavior in your life. So if your mother and father didn't live through positive, you know, love, but rather necessitated love, obligatory love, then it's not love. And you're going to find that kind of same relationship in your own life because that's the conditioning. How you respond to crisis, conditioning. How you respond to opportunity, conditioning. Think of all the times in life we should have made an opportunity but chose to wait for one where you might be waiting for Godot. Just sit on a train station saying, well, opportunity is going to come by sooner or later. Not going to happen. The only people who are going to be ahead of this curve are people who go out of their way to say, I'm not limited by my race, I'm not limited by my identity politics, not limited by my economic, educational, cultural, or religious factions. I'm not limited. And the moment you become not limited, you're going to be as healthy as can be because you know the consequences of not being. You're going to be happy. You're going to be positive. Then your heart will be healthy because you're not going to be doing stupid things all day long. Remember, distinguish doing a stupid thing from being stupid, because no one does one thing that's foolish. It is the pattern of behavior that is the consistency of what we do. And I look for patterns of behavior to help people, not just a one-off. Everybody can do one-off stupid. But if you intentionally do things that self-sabotage, if you intentionally wake up each day and say, I feel like I need to be depressed today, why? Why do you need to be depressed? What do you gain from it? What do you mean, what do I gain? Yeah, what do you gain? Do you think you don't gain something by being depressed, by being anxious, by being fearful, by being rageful, by being angry, racist? You think you don't gain something? Everybody gains something from everything they do. We're just not honest enough as a society to ask ourselves, ask the rapist, ask the bank robber, ask the genocidalist, ask the Hitler, ask the so-called good Germans. What exactly did you gain by keeping silent when all the others were being rounded up? And you knew it. Everybody knew it. There were no secrets. What did you gain? Did you gain temporary security? What did you gain? We just don't like to open that door because it takes us too deep into the dark side of the psyche and social conditioning and personal adaptation to social conditioning. And you think it's just the Nazis? No, I'll show you Pol Pot. You think it's just the Cambodians? No, I'll show you what we did, the United States did all across the globe. So it's a serious issue. To be a human being, you first have to identify what it means. And it's more than a career and a family where you live in your neighborhood. Those are secondary. So if you understand what I'm saying, then you understand and appreciate that for those of us who care about helping people, we care about people. You know, there are people in your life you care about. And you want to see them do well. But do they want to see them do well? Do they want to be as healthy and happy as you want them to be? And how many times is our own parents or brothers or sisters? You think every family that looks good from the outside is harmonious inside the walls of that house? Think again. You think that a foundation like the Pacifica Foundation that promotes the idea that we are for women's rights, are you? Really? Free speech? Wow. Then why is it the only place I've been censored my entire 52-year career on the radio, one of the longest broadcasting careers in American history, the longest non-commercial radio daily program in American history, the only place I was ever censored? ABC Network? No. WR? No. WEVD for 13 years? No. WNEW? No. WBAI, KPFK, PFW. So you see, I'm used to seeing hypocrisy, and I'm used to seeing people try to cover it up and give the illusion of it being otherwise. Tomorrow I'm going to do a commentary, I wrote it yesterday, on the hypocrisy of the left and the hypocrisy of the right. They're both legions of fools. And so if you take your marching orders from them, if you take your talking points from them, you're going to be a part of their group dynamic. Not healthy. Why do you think 100 million Americans calling themselves independents did not vote in the last election? Because they refused to vote for the lesser of two evils. The fact they didn't vote for Jill Stein is a separate issue. So let's go back to the heart for a moment. I'm going to give you the best way of staying healthy with your heart is to be happy. Happy people are the healthiest people on the planet and the longest lived. But health and happiness only go together in harmony if you try to approach it without buying it. You can't buy happiness. You can't buy it through a diamond ring. It's just a stupid rock. It's overpriced. Anybody buying a diamond should have their head examined, because you're buying something that's completely worthless. It has nothing to do with loving someone, and our relationship will last forever. He just bought me a 3-carat. No, he's a fool, and he's out that money. And some jeweler is thanking the people in South Africa who work the gold mine, diamond mines, or in Australia or in Canada, and everybody plays you, and they get you to believe that this is what really solidifies a relationship. How many times have you seen in one of these stupid television shows where they say, well, Brad and Angelina are going to have another child in order to save their marriage? You never save a marriage by having children. The three worst things anyone does when they get married is A, get married, B, buy a house, and C, have children. Want to destroy your family? That's the way you do it. I mean, we make all the wrong choices. You can have a quality relationship without marriage, and if you want a child, good. Adopt one of the 7 million that don't have parents. That's a good and noble thing to do. Bring love to a child. Anyhow, health for the heart is happiness for the whole system. Then you got to eat a diet that is absolutely, positively organic as much as possible. That's necessary. You also have to look at the omega-3 fatty acids. If there's one nutrient above all else for the heart, it's the omega-3s. These do something special. They help ease vascular inflammation, they lower your blood pressure, they improve your blood flow, and they deliver nutrients to your cells. Now, you can have them either through fish, or you can have them through avocados, or flaxseed, or hemp. And if you consume an omega-3-rich diet, you're going to be very healthy. Next nutrient, which is just about as important as coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol, it's required to convert fats and sugars into usable energy in nearly every cell of the body. And since your heart never rests, it needs a substantial amount of coenzyme Q10 to pump nutrient-carrying blood to all your cells. But coenzyme Q10 levels in the heart tissue decline as you age. After the age of 30, substantial decline. And each decade after that really goes down. And by the way, statin drugs also deplete coenzyme Q10 in the blood. And also, you want to make sure that you're getting a high-quality coenzyme Q10, because a lot of people use the cheap ones that don't have any ubiquinol. Then PQQ, that's another compound involved in the maintenance of youthful energy production. And the PQQ is what your body cannot make on its own. It's a unique nutritional profile supporting better sleep, better heart health, and cognitive function. Everyone that I counsel has heart problems and brain problems. I'm suggesting PQQ because it also supports heart cell function in the presence of free radicals and promotes better blood flow to the heart muscle. Vitamin K is essential for maintaining a healthy cardiovascular system. Magnesium, it's the most important mineral. It is your most important for cardiovascular support, and there are more than 300 essential biochemical reactions at the heart level. It can help relax smooth muscles within the blood vessels, thereby reducing peripheral vascular resistance and promoting healthier cardiovascular function. And additionally, magnesium has been shown to beneficially impact serum lipid profiles, promoting a healthy inflammatory response, and you need magnesium. And also TMG, trimethylglycine. It helps lower your homocysteine level, and that can help protect you. B-complex is also important in that as well, especially B6, B12, and folic acid. Also, you want to get your blood pressure down. Garlic, quercetin are both important. The garlic twice a day, quercetin three times a day. So today, the nutrients I just gave you, plus staying away from the animal proteins, staying with lots of good healthy juices throughout the day, will help your heart. Now, tomorrow I'm going to look at some of the anti-aging nutrients, like nicotinamide riboside, but we'll save that for tomorrow. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Null. And the road to health is not just eating right, exercising, de-stressing. That's all important and good. But one of the reasons when I'm counseling people or when I'm doing a health support group, which I'll be doing shortly, or doing a retreat, ask people what I talk about. 95% of what I talk about is the value of our beliefs, because that's what liberates people or constricts them. Okay, and we're going to play a clip now. This is a clip from the march we did on Washington, and this is a clip, there's two clips on this. This is a shorter one, it's about 4 minutes, where I'm interviewing some people. Now, the people I'm interviewing are not from our march. This is from the Occupy Wall Street group that was one block away from the White House. I didn't even know they were there. We were in Lafayette Park, which is right across the street from the White House. But someone said, Gary, there's a Occupy Wall Street people. Why don't you go up and ask them, would they like to come down and hear some of the guest speakers and give them some free food and show our support for them. So I said, sure. So you'll hear the conversations. Then I'll give you the postscript.
Standing between the White House and Lafayette Park, where thousands of individuals have come from around the United States to offer a voice of challenge to the FDA. They're concerned about their rights in the future to take supplements that they deem important or their physician deems important for their well-being. The Obama administration promised when they came into office that it wouldn't be business as usual, and yet it's business as usual. Individuals are also here to protest the FDA's support of genetic engineering, but has said nothing in support of organic and sustainable agriculture. We'll be talking with individuals about their concerns.
There's more wheat killer residues in our food. or there's been insecticides that have been engineered to be expressed in every single cell of a crop, such as BT corn. And the FDA is basically a classic example of revolving door regulatory capture, where they handpicked the appointees of the industry, the biotech industry, which is basically the pesticide industry, which has bought the seed industry, which is engineering resistance to its pesticides so that they can sell both the seeds and then the pesticides. Basically, it's their people. They bought off both parties. They get their handpicked people in FDA, EPA, USDA, and give them a green light and a free pass to market and peddle these unproven, they've not been proven safe, to give them a green light into the American market. And basically, there's a huge experiment underway to see, well, what happens when a whole generation of Americans eats low doses of whatever these foreign insecticidal compounds are, or compounds that enable high doses of weed killer. This is a huge experiment, and we do not have the right to opt out of it. We want President Obama and his administration to uphold his promise to enact mandatory labeling of genetic engineering. Every country in Europe, Japan, over 50 countries around the world have mandatory labeling of genetic engineered foods. And this is a basic fundamental right that we as Americans have a right to know what's in our food. We have a right to know and make a choice about what we feed ourselves and our children.
My uncle was a plant geneticist. He brought us, unfortunately, the winter tomato. That was research that he did when he was back in college. So it was the most mortifying experience he's ever had to live with, was to see this escape out of the lab. So when I was a little kid, he told us this information can go very, very wrong, and you need to watch out. So for the past 40 years, that has been my focus, is watching our food and our environment, basically. I'm an environmental engineer, so it runs in the family.
This movement, our movement, your movement, is standing for real freedom and real democracy. Because if we aren't even free to decide what we'll eat, what we'll grow, to know what's in our food, how are we free in any other way? Because it's our food that shapes every cell of our body, every bit of our organs, and at least the elder women in my country say it shapes our thinking too. You eat bad food, you have bad thinking. You eat good food, your mind works fresh, creative, beautiful. Now, the denial for labeling is linked so much to the food dictatorship that Monsanto has spread. And I feel terrible that a White House with Obama is doing exactly the same thing as the White House with Bush Sr. and the White House with Bush Jr. I've just been given this wonderful T-shirt which reminds us of what President Obama said in 2007. It's from Food Democracy Now. Here's what I'll do as president. We'll let folks know whether their food has been genetically modified, because Americans should know what they are buying. And I would add what they're eating, because you don't just buy food, you eat it. He should be held to his promise. The argument that supports the denial of labeling was a lie created by President Bush Sr. when we managed to get the Convention on Biological Diversity through at the Earth Summit in 92, and we managed to get a biosafety protocol commitment under Article 19.3 of that convention. President Bush Sr. walked out and said, I will not let my biotech industry be regulated. And the instrument for deregulation was a scientific lie called substantial equivalence. We will pretend GM foods are the same as organic foods and conventional foods. And therefore, we will not look for safety. We will not allow regulation, and we will definitely not allow labeling. Substantial equivalence is a lie, because if the same company can claim that they've done something new and claim a patent. They can't deny that they've done something new when it's an issue of responsibility to citizens to let them know what's in that food. Whether they're antibiotic resistance markers, BT toxin genes, viral promoters, we need to know. We have a right to know. Then another lie is it doesn't matter how food was produced. You should look at product and not at process. But we in the organic movement know it makes a difference how food is produced. That's why we have process labeling. And organic labels are there. But we also need to know what's not organic. And the moment food is genetically modified, it's not organic. The onus just can't be on the organic movement. It must be on the polluters, contaminators, and toxic drug pushers in our food system. First, they claim they were going to feed the world, but their crops do not produce more yields. In India, they claimed 1,005.
Now, let me put this in perspective. We spend a lot of time and a lot of people organized to see what can we start that we can finish, that it's going to take years, that it must be very positive, that it can't be just negative and gloom and doom, because that turns a lot of people off. But it doesn't turn people off to hear that something is wrong, providing that what you're doing is providing something is right and corrects it and helps them and solves problems. And that's what that whole march was about. People came from California and from around the United States. Vandana Shiva, that you just heard from, came from India. Now, I want to play a couple more clips of other things today, so you can listen to the whole clip up on our website. There's another 15 minutes to it. Now, here's what you didn't hear. At the other group up the street, one block away, they had all these tents. The entire little park was totally taken by tents. They had little groups outside, and each group was talking about the 1% and what was wrong with 1%. And I listened to each group, and they were correct, and I certainly supported that. And I went over to each one of the little, they didn't have leaders. They prided themselves not having leaders. And so I asked a simple question. I said, we have people from all over the world who have been activists for a long time who want to talk about that 1%, and would you like to come and hear them? No. We have some organic food? No. And then I started finding out when I interviewed the people, and I will play this and you can watch it for yourself. This is the typical one. Two women both said that they had children and that they were there in a tent and eating the same food everyone else ate, which was kind of donated food, which is never good food. And they were there to show solidarity. And I said, but what good does that do if you don't have a game plan that extends beyond this? Because sooner or later, you're going to give up your tent, you're going to go back to the life you lived, but the people who control us, which is not 1%, it's almost 28%, are going to continue controlling us. They control the body politic. What are you doing to actually change that? Well, we're protesting it. You've got a few people coming here. Most of the time they're coming here is to donate some clothes and some food, and they were only wearing clothes that had been donated. And I saw this also down at Occupy Wall Street. I was there for 23 days straight, including the first day. And at some point, the movement morphed into, do they have enough food? Do they have, you know, bad weather? Do they have a tent? Are they warm? Instead of, what are we actually doing to protest the 1% in a way that will impact them? Because when I was talking to these people, they all wore clothes and had credit cards from the 1%. They were eating foods and shopping in places from the 1%. They were watching television and going to the movies for the 1%. So everything they were doing, every part in their life, was supporting the 1%, but they managed to find time to protest. And it turns out that 3 weeks later, that park was empty. So what do we have to learn outside of a slogan, 1%? which is in and of itself not correct. If you want to talk about the 625 billionaires in the United States, fine. Then you're dealing with 0.001%. If you want to talk about how many people adversely affect our lives by the power they hold, the positions they maintain, a lot of those people would consider themselves liberal. So how do you deal with something that's living, a person that is living, on the one hand, calling themselves something but not actualizing it? That's that disconnect that we live by. And so at least the March Against Monsanto, it's still alive. We've managed to do documentaries. We've turned people off of eating genetically engineered food by the millions. We're getting scientists to challenge them. We're getting lawsuits against the perpetrators of the Monsanto business. We're making a difference by the fact that 10 to 20 million people would stop eating genetically engineered food and start eating organic. That is doing something positive. That's only one thing, but it's still something good. And we continue to stay focused. By the way, you'll find no big division. There's no arguments among the people in the movement, Jeffrey Smith, myself, and Dennis Shiva, Chopra, who just died out of Canada, a really wonderful person, Mr. Cummings, who heads the organic movement. We are all working together cooperatively. That's how you get something done. Right now, almost every group has a counter group that all they do is fight, and little gets done. And the mainstream media plays on all this. That's what you didn't see. Now, something very upbeat, because I want people to realize that when you change your perception, you change your reality. But you have to be open and vulnerable to allow that perception to move, to allow the authentic voice of reason to emerge. Here's a person that did just that recently, just a couple months ago, at a retreat. Now, I never ask people what's wrong with you when they come. That's not what I do. I'm there to encourage healthier choices, healthier thoughts, deeper thoughts, better thoughts, and that's what I do. Here's the outcome.
Okay. Ironically, I said to Gary, because I know he's a marathon runner, I said to him, running a marathon or participating in a marathon is on my bucket list. Little did I know that my bucket list would be fulfilled within a matter of a couple of days. I just finished the Gary Null Retreat Marathon in Texas. When we first came out, I would say the most I've ever walked is a mile, maybe two. So Monday through Thursday, when we were walking those 3 miles, it was just really, really tough. And I was power walking, and I was giving it my everything. And I remember the first time my mom was like, "Oh, you're really winded." I'm like, "Well, what do you expect? I just walked 3 miles and then up a hill to the property." Prior to coming here, and really what I came here to work on is, you know, just to be laid on the line completely, because maybe this will help someone else or inspire them. So what my challenges have been over the past 4 years are challenges of infertility. I've been through numerous rounds of IVF. I have miscarried. It has drained me mind, body, spirit, soul. And I worked at a DSS in Mount Vernon. And literally what I just did, I would have been sitting at the desk, at the computer, all day doing this. And to know that 3 miles was tough for me, and I've just finished, you know, a marathon, which is 26.2 miles, and I'm able to talk to you without being winded, you know, is a testimony to Gary, to the staff, to everyone here with the retreat, for, you know, having us eat organic and vegan, having us breathe properly out of our mouth, in through our mouth and out of our mouth, where normally I was always trained in through your nose, out through your mouth. The lectures, the truths that he shared, whether it's something that's medical, whether it's something that's natural and holistic, whether it's something that's, you know, political and things that are going on in the world, globally, whether it's limitations that we impose on ourselves. And, you know, I had some times where I felt like, okay, so when we first got here, a couple people talked about walking 15 miles, and I was like, oh, my God, they're crazy. I could never do that. And then here it is with those same people. We just finished the 26.2 miles. And when I got to mile 15, I was like, all right, I'm good. I'm happy. I got it. I'm going to stop. And Gary was down at the end, and Gary was like, you're going to go some more. And I was like, I am. And I was like, I'm not done. He's like, no, you're not done. And I said, okay. He said, you know why you're not done? I said, why? He said, because you don't want to be done. And he was right. I didn't want to be done. So I had some people to help to massage me, and I went back out there. I mean, at one point, literally, when I tell you that I saw stars, I literally saw stars. There's absolutely nothing that can't be done. So this was a blessing, a gift, a relief.
Okay. Let's put this in a little different perspective. No one there knew that they were going to do a marathon. The vast majority of people there were very sick. I only found out what they were sick from when they were leaving. And on Friday, they were leaving Friday after lunch. I said, who would like to challenge themselves? And so seven people held up their hands. And I said, okay, so let's do something different today. And we went down to the road. This is a beautiful bucolic road out in the country. And I said, there's a course here. It's out and back. It's just a mile and a half. That's all it is. Let's see if you can do that. Now, mind you, some of these people hadn't walked at all. Some had done the walk. And so they walked. And when they got back, and I went out with them, and they got back, and I said, how do you feel? Feel good. Really? Good. Now, let the trees talk to you. Feel nature. Just be mindful. Go into the zone. And there was some energy work, and they kept going. Now, we had medical doctors and nurses and everyone else down there. No, I wouldn't want to let anyone, you know, the moment they got tired, it was over, and we even had a golf cart going with them. I just said, go until you're tired. That's all. Let's see what you can do. And then the other guests came down, and they started to watch, and they started cheering people on. And all seven did 26 miles minimum. She's actually incorrect. They did 27.5 miles, but two of them did 30 miles. You're going to hear from one of the guys who did 30 miles. He's just getting the final results from his pulmonologist because I didn't know he had end-stage COPD and leukemia. And he was supposed to go into hospice care. Now, wrap your mind around that for a moment. A man who has two terminal diseases goes out with no training, none, and he walks 30 miles nonstop. And then I had to stop him. I literally had to grab his hands and say, friend, enough, enough. He said, well, I could do another one. I said, I know you could, but your body has had enough. And everyone else, it was the same. A woman with really high blood pressure and high cholesterol, she had dropped 100 points off her cholesterol. Blood pressure normal, blood sugar normal, 100 points off of 100 points off of blood sugar. Some of the things that you saw, and you're going to hear, because each day this week I'm going to play you one of them who finished it. Some we actually recorded when they were on the course, and why? How? As now, I've done a lot of marathons. I mean, a lot. Just one list I was sent yesterday, I had 32 of them. I was just looking at them, and that's just a small portion of them. And I've helped over 30,000 people do a marathon, but it normally takes about a year. You graduate your training every week and every day until you're finally training about 20 miles on a Sunday, starting in August, and then you peak in the marathon. Now, ask anyone who's ever done a marathon, ask any coach, ask any athlete. Could you take a group of people with very advanced disease who have no training, who are very sick, and with nothing at all, they can go out and do a marathon and be dancing, literally dancing, jumping in the air, exuberant? Could you? That happened just 2.5 months ago. And tomorrow, the man went back and saw his physician, and the physician could find no congestion in his lungs, COPD. So he said, I don't know what's wrong, but I can't find any congestion, so go to this pulmonologist. So I guess today or tomorrow, he's going to see a pulmonologist. We'll hear from him. So there's an important lesson here. The lesson is that always seek a reality that aligns with your desires and dreams. Don't just accept the reality that's been given to you as if there's no other option. Because then there isn't. Whatever you embrace, you become. And when you can surrender the certainty of your beliefs, then you're opening yourself up to another dimension of happiness and healing. So there, you just heard from a woman. She didn't even get into all of her conditions. So science will say this is not possible. The skeptics will just poo-hoo it completely. Okay, that's fine. But it happened. We filmed all of it. Roland Marconi, one of our editors and cinematographers, was there the whole time. We're going to put all this up so you see these people. These people would never be allowed into a marathon because of their physical health. And here they did it, and now we're getting all these reversals. All of them. Every single one of those 7 people. We are having them on only after they've had their follow-up exams and have a new status. So you see, there's always another reality. But we're locked into the identity, the reality that we cannot surrender, and that's where we are limited. More on energy tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.